behind every great beer is an even better story. Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. On this episode, I talk with one of the absolute great blokes of the industry, Dave Padden from Akasha Brewing. You know, you talk to people in the industry and everyone always seems to have a good word to say about this fella. So I was really keen to have a chat and find out more about his story. He's the creator of the very popular beer, the Corbin D, and hails from just outside the uber trendy inner west of Sydney. Dave has very quietly been building a brilliant portfolio of hop-forward beers in a place that I had never ever heard of, Five Dock. He's an ex-home brewer who's been happy to help others looking to find their place in the pro scene. And as I said, he is one of the good guys. So I'll shut up and get on with the interview. All right, welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, Dave Padden. How you going, mate?
I'm really well. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
I'm just going to crack my beer. As I said to you before, living in the middle of a renovation, it was very difficult to find a cold beer tonight, so I've done it. What have you got in your hands?
I've actually, normally I'd crack a can as well, but I've prematurely cracked a bottle before we came on air, and I've got a Forest for the Trees barrel-aged Saison. So, rustled out the back of the cool room down in the brewery and tasting amazing.
Be nice to be able to get downstairs to the brewery and just grab whatever you want.
It was probably special. Somebody probably put it there for a special occasion and I'd ruined it for them.
You stole one of your staff's beers or something.
It's happened before.
Mate, I'm really looking forward to hearing your story tonight. And maybe you can fill us in on the true story from my guest from episode 49, Ben Miller, as well.
Oh, I can give you all the truth through all the lies he's given you. You
know, he is already talking trash behind your back. He reckons that his listener numbers from his episode will smash yours.
Maybe that's it. But, you know, he'll be marketing from behind the scenes. So, you know, well, I'll just let it naturally happen.
And you can just come back at him and say, mate, I've got a real brewery.
No matter what he says. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but he's nowhere near as stressed as I, so, you know.
Fair enough.
All swings and roundabouts, isn't it?
Now, mate, as with many of my guests on here, I'm pretty keen to talk about how easy it was for you to become an overnight success tonight.
It's always the way, isn't it?
Yeah. But let's jump back into the DeLorean. We're going to power up the flux capacitor and head back to 18-year-old Dave. It's 92. Nirvana has been number one on the charts. Bill Clinton became the US president. Wayne's World, gotta love it, is released in theaters. And Miley Cyrus is born. How old does that make you feel?
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah. We're starting on a really positive note here, mate. Come on.
But most importantly, I want to know, 18-year-old Dave, what were you drinking at the time?
Oh, dear. So I was, I just started my first year of university at Sydney Uni doing a Bachelor of Science.
Yeah.
And we were quite often, more often than we should have, which is usually the way when you're first year of university, drinking in the Wentworth Bar. Drinking in the Wentworth Bar, always Tui's New because I was dedicated to it. Anything like a VB, but Tui's New all the way. All the other stuff tasted awful, but Tui's New was great.
Yeah, fair enough. Look, Tui's New was okay for its day. I remember when they introduced that into Victoria, I was drinking with a mate in Victoria because it was really cheap. And I think they called it the easy drinking draft beer, and we polished off many cartons of that. I thought I was pretty cool myself.
Yeah, I'd hate to think how many I polished off, but a few, you might say.
Fair enough. Now, I know you're a home brewer originally. So when did you do your first Cooper's Kit and Kilo home brew?
Yeah, at least you've cut to the chase. We all started with that, right?
And yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And, I can continue with the usual story that it tasted like shit and all that kind of stuff as well. But actually, it wasn't too bad.
How old were you?
So that would have been that was before. I mean, it wasn't like I bought a Cooper's Kit and that was the start of my, my dream run into home brewing. So that would have been, I'm going to say mid-20s.
Yeah, okay, yep.
So gave it a bit of a go. It was all right. Bottles exploded. Living at home. Yep. Mum wasn't happy and thought, you know what? I'm just going to stick to the Tui's New and yeah, left it alone for a little while.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So when did you actually like get into it seriously then?
So I think it's around, I'd say around 2006, I reckon it was.
Oh, right, yeah.
So a fair while ago, you know, as you and I are pretty old, so yeah, you know, wasn't that, I'm still had a few years out of my belt at that stage. But, you know, I was lucky enough to, you know, the job. So going back to my Bachelor of Science, I did a year and a half of that and then transferred to business, which was probably a good thing, and finished off a Bachelor of Business. And in my career, I managed to travel a lot to all sorts of wonderful places, whether it be Europe or the US, which was a big one for me, and Asia and places like that. So managed to get into drinking decent beer relatively quickly after that Tui's New stage. So knew that there was good beer around, and then sort of thought I'd give it a go sort of around that 2006 timeframe, and bought another Cooper's kit, brewed, and added a bit more sugar and a different yeast, and then progressed onto the, you know, the stovetop with the partial mash, then moved to all grain pretty quickly. And it's pretty, you know, okay, you can almost look at, see the actual time in my timeline of, you know, as soon as I you know, studied it up, built a, you know, bought an Esky, got an old keg cut up and a burner and all the usual things to get the all grain going. It wasn't far into that that the bug bit pretty hard, and I was brewing pretty much every weekend.
Yeah. And now what kind of brewer were you? Because I know you got the science background, so I'm thinking that maybe you were like a stickler to the rules, or were you perhaps, you know, big on experimentation? How did it go for you?
Yeah, I think for me, it's a little bit of both, but it certainly starts with a stickler for the rules, I think. And that's pretty much for anything that I do, whether it's a recipe for cooking, whether it's brewing beer. Back then in particular, it was about trying to understand the process and using recipes to understand whether it's a certain style or whatever I'm trying to achieve. And then sort of once I've nailed it, then start to bring in the artistic element of it all and start to play with it a little bit. So I brewed a lot of the same beer many, many times, and probably guess from what style of beers that I've always been into the same sort of thing. So usually on the hop forward style. Yeah. Never, you know, a little bit of malt here and there, but really, really focusing on hops all the way back then.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast. In the words of Transvision Vamp, I don't want your money, honey. I want your love. I'm not going to ask for a Patreon donation because that's not really why I do this. I just want you to help me spread the craft beer gospel. Whichever podcast service you use, if you like my interviews, please like, subscribe, follow, rate, and share my podcast with your friends. It all helps to spread the craft beer message throughout the community, and in turn, hopefully can help those of you out there who make a living working in the industry. That's all. I'll let you get back to the podcast. Were you a competition brewer? Did you like to get, you know, your name up in lights in the local competitions?
No, I wasn't actually. It's, I mean, everybody likes to get their name in lights, but no, I wasn't really a competition kind of guy. I enjoyed the camaraderie of other brewers, and actually helped start the Western Sydney Brewers, which is a home brewing club back around 2008, I think it was, and which is still going today, which is great. Cool. And so I really much more enjoyed, you know, getting together every couple of weeks, sharing some beers, sharing some stories and learning from each other.
Yeah, beautiful.
So much more of that, not so much competitions, no.
And sort of at what stage did you, like, you know, really think to yourself, oh, I think I'm okay at this and I could probably, you know, make a pro career out of it? Oh,
for a long time. I think it's kind of one of those things where, as I said, yeah, the bug really bit hard. Sort of in those sort of 2006, 2007, really, really enjoying the process and knew that this was something. I'd never had that sort of passion with anything before, except my wife, of course, because I'm sure she's listening.
I was going to say, hold on, you're married. Yeah.
That was quite.
Careful. You know what I said? We can cut some shit out.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to cut that out.
There's no way she'll listen to it. But, you know, in terms of whether it's a job, whether it's a hobby, whether it's whatever it is, I'd never really experienced a passion like it. And even when you do, sometimes you get a hobby, you know, whether it's fishing, whether it's whatever it is, and you kind of, it peters off after a while. This one never did. And it still doesn't now. So that's pretty cool.
It's a bloody good thing.
So around that time, you know, you start thinking you're down in the garage. You know, I was a late starter. I used to get to work, lucky to get to work between 9 and 10 a.m. in the morning. And but if I was brewing, the alarm would go off at 5 o'clock. I'd be up like a rocket.
What actually were you doing for a job at the time?
I've always been on the IT side. So my Bachelor of Business, I had a major in IT. So kind of a mix of both. We worked for a bunch of IT companies over the years, more on the business side, so more on the sales and marketing side.
Yeah, okay.
Which is why, you know, which as I said, sort of let me travel pretty much all around the world, which was kind of cool.
Nice.
And not have to pay for it.
Beautiful. And so then in 2015, you decided to launch Akasha as a gypsy brewing brand. Now, I've got to ask you, so gypsy brewers have sometimes been shunned by some in the industry for not having skin in the game. How were you treated back then? Was there a bit of a stigma attached to your brand at the time?
We kind of came at it at a bit of a different angle. I don't think there's many and we certainly weren't seeing ourselves as a gypsy brewer as such back then. I think we always were, as I said, I was just about to say that every gypsy brewer kind of always has that dream of opening their own brewery. Yeah. So I wouldn't take that away from anybody. And the way we came out, we actually started building the brewery when we first started brewing it. And when we say gypsy brewing, we were just brewing at one brewery the whole time, which was Rocks over in Alexandria. Yep. So it was, we'd already started building the brewery by the time we started that first contract brewery.
Right. Okay, I'm with you. Yeah, okay.
So a little bit down the middle, I guess. Yeah. We're contract brewing, but skin in the game was already happening and pretty quickly too. So I think that was around, I'm going to say March 2015. So I'd had a few months off after my previous brewery and, wanted to get into it as quickly as I could.
Yeah, okay. And what about like getting started, like, you know, the business plan, the funding model? Did you have a really solid business plan and were you funded by friends and family or how did that all sort of work for you?
I guess I was this is my second brewery, so I had a little bit of money behind myself, which was good. It was mainly a family enterprise in terms of the money that went into it.
Yeah, okay, cool.
And I am a business plan kind of guy and some would say that I plan everything I do a little too much. Yep. But we certainly, in this case, certainly planned it to the nth degree over a couple of months, I guess, over 3 months. We sort of, you know, after Christmas in 2014, between then and March, we really, really figured out what we were going to do. I'm not a brew pub kind of guy. I'm not a hospitality kind of guy.
Fair enough.
So really wanted to get into distributing our beers from day one. So that's what we did.
You just mentioned a second ago that this was just second brewery. What was your first brewery?
Riverside Brewing Company.
Ah, right, okay.
In Parramatta, yeah. So helped found that one in 2012, I think it was.
Yeah, rightio. There you go. You're an old hand at this thing, aren't you?
I don't know about old hand, but a little bit of experience. So a little bit of experience going into, second time around, you do things a little differently. Yeah. The way that you build a brewery, the way that you structure things, there's a whole lot of, still learning today, obviously, but learning a hell of a lot the first time and taking some of those learnings.
Now, you've got to excuse my ignorance because obviously I'm a Tasmanian. I've got bugger all idea about the hot spots around Sydney. But why did you choose Five Dock as a location? What sort of led you to there?
It's really difficult to define a location for a brewery anywhere, to be honest. And we looked at – it was definitely going to be Sydney. I'm a Western Sydney guy, so I live out Parramatta Way, which is a good sort of 15, 20 kilometres out of west from the city.
Yep.
And we kind of put a circle around anywhere between the inner west, where about 3,000 breweries are now, as you know, and my place, and maybe another 5Ks past my place. So really put a big circle around that. Thought really strongly. We wanted it to be in Western Sydney. That's who we are and that's who we represent personally. And, even though we were definitely a production brewery, we're still going to have a hospitality component. I mean, it's pretty well known that it's an important part of, particularly when you're starting a brewery, really need that hospitality component to help you fund things. Yeah. So we wanted to, provide something for Western Sydney. And so I put a big circle around that, looked at many, many, many properties, and we ended up pretty much right in the middle of the circle, which is Five Dock, about 10Ks. Out of Sydney. So not as inner west as Marrickville, but certainly not as outer west as Parramatta. So that's where we ended up and a great little spot here. And we've got our own little market here. So
beautiful. Yeah, maybe like the middle west. I don't know.
We do call it the Midwest. So, just to keep our own little Midwest brewery. Nice.
Now, mate, Akasha's got a bit of a mantra that drives the decisions at your brewery, which I believe is brew high quality, hop-forward beers and consistent beers. But I'm tipping that that comes at a bit of a cost. And I'm, of course, talking about the laboratory that you have because, you know, when breweries are struggling to, you know, scrimp and scrape to get their first beers to market using every cent to basically make that happen, here are you as a brand new brewery. You're ponying up for some serious quality control straight up. And, you know, some people might applaud that decision, think it's great because you're going to produce some beer, some great beers, and some might say that you are bloody crazy to invest in that like so early on. What drove your decision to do that?
Look, I think we thought long and hard about what we wanted to represent. And it's a pretty easy thing for me and everybody who, you know, who works here. You know, we've got my business partners, our brewers, everybody has the same belief. And the belief is that, and we all love hop forward beers. And to be honest, if you didn't, it's probably not much point working here, right? So we love a hop forward beer, but we're all passionate about quality beer. And I think they're the two big things that drive us every day. It doesn't have to be an expensive process when you first have a lab. It doesn't have like none of the all of the processes can be done at a bit of a cut price way. So you don't have to have all the best machinery. You don't have to have $100,000 invested in a laboratory to open a lab. Doesn't need a lot of money. So there's a lot of ways you can do things, for want of a better term, on the cheap. But it's just fundamentally important that we test everything that goes out of the brewery.
And did you speak to other brewers and get some advice on what they'd done around that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't think none of us are inventing, reinventing the wheel. There's plenty of people who've been doing this a lot longer than I have, and it's really important, I think, in any business, right? Not just brewing, whatever you're in, is to have, whether you call them mentors, whatever you call them, but it's really important to have people that you can draw on that expertise. So on the lab front, there's a guy called VB who was out at Young Henry's for a long, long time, and he spent a lot of time with us really perfecting some of the methods that we're still using today in the lab, and plenty of other people. I spent a lot of time with people like Brad from Stone and Wood who's had a big impact on the way we do things here as well.
Yeah, that's cool. In hindsight, probably the best decision you could have made because you're obviously producing bloody absolutely cracking beers.
Thanks.
No worries.
We think they're all right.
Good. Well, let's talk more about them. So you brew them hop forward, but for me, it also feels like there's a bit of a element of they're like really approachable. I mean, even the Corbin, which is a big beer, I feel it still drinks like you could have a few of them. So what is the mantra in designing your beers?
We always, even though we are hop forward, we always think about balance when we brew a beer. So, we brew IPAs is right in our wheelhouse. Our Hot Smith is our flagship. Our Corbin D is obviously well liked out there, which is great. Yes, we love it.
It's a hot beer, some might call it.
What's that, sorry?
Some might call it a hype beer, perhaps. They love it that much.
Oh, I don't think it's a hype beer. I don't think it's a hype beer.
But it's a lot of three times a year. Yeah, they love it, yeah.
And, we love these beers. And we also, once a year, we do a triple IPA called the Wooden Leg, which is, it's a big beer, 10.5%. And every time we go up a step, it's probably about another 50% jump in hops usage as well. Wow. So we get up to there. We did a quad IPA for Gabs last year. And even as we get up towards that triple and quad IPA, we're still thinking about how do we make that beer drinkable?
Yeah.
How do we make a 10.5% triple IPA drinkable? So you could, not that you might want to drink three or four schooners, but you could if that's what
you wanted to have an early night.
It's a dangerous game to play, let me tell you. So drinkability certainly is something that we strive for, no matter if it's a 3.5% session IPA or a 12% quad.
Yeah, cool. And so what breweries or beers inspired you?
A lot of my influences and passion comes from the States. As I said, I'm lucky enough to travel through there a fair bit over the years. And I think, someone like Vinny Chiloza, Russian River, would be a big influence on what I do. I've been lucky to meet him a couple of times. He's one of the most open guys in the brewing industry around the world. You ask him anything, he'll tell you the way it is and how it should be done or how he does. He won't say it's how it should be done, but he'll say, this is the way I do it. And, this is the way we like doing it. So
he goes okay at it too, really, doesn't he?
Oh, fantastic guy. And
I've had fresh Pliny once in my life and it was fucking amazing.
How good is it?
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, that beer alone is probably one of our biggest influences in this brewery. So so not just the brewery or the guys themselves, but that beer is just, I mean, all their beers are amazing, right? Whether it's sour, whether it's an IPA.
Good stuff.
But it really does. Pliny does hold a special place for all of us. And, yeah, lucky enough to have it a few times, which is good.
Beautiful. And your other brewers are all of the same mindset. How do you guys work together when you're collaborating to build a new beer?
Yeah, it's a good question. We and sometimes I need to be careful too. We have such a great team of brewers here, and shout out to them. They all ask me to shout out and say hi. So hi, guys. we all share the same passion in terms of the drink, you know, the types of beers that we like to drink, the types of beers we like to brew, balance, quality, all the things that our brand represents. Everybody has those. So it's the same sort of thing. So, it's really, today's a perfect example. We're playing around with a bunch of newer styles. Obviously, hazy IPA is right in our sort of experimental phase at the moment, playing around with different yeasts, and it's really exciting. And we'll often sort of sit around, and it's important to make sure that everybody has input, and I don't just sort of go off and say, you know, here's a good beer, let's try it.
Yeah.
We need to try and make sure that we as a team come up with that, and that's exactly how we work.
Now, look, I like to dig deep and tackle the big issues on the Beer Hiller interviews. So I want to know, with the team of the brewers, who controls the brew house stereo?
Ooh, it's really one of the tough ones, isn't it? It's certainly not me. I tried to stamp my authority at the start, you know, when we started this brewery, and I got sent straight out the door. You know, you are not allowed.
Oh, what?
To touch the stereo.
You're not allowed. The boss.
I know. You'd think I would be, but you know. Oh, so it's definitely not me.
Okay. Well, if it was you, what would be on your ultimate brew day playlist?
Oh, that's a good question. They're definitely. Oh, wow. You've stumped me on this one. It'd definitely be more electronic oriented.
Oh, okay.
So that's where most of my a bit of Daft Punk.
Yep.
Certainly gets in there. So, the brewers always give me shit about things like Daft Punk. So, that's probably a good one.
Mate, I reckon they give me more shit because I'd be probably pumping some Springsteen or Foo Fighters or something sort of, Daddy Dad Rock.
You are Daddy Dad Rock, aren't you?
I am. I love it. Daddy I love it. You know, I've got this theory that when you're about 16 ish, you're forming, those songs that are there at that time in your life. So, what, about 1990 for you, I feel like they're the songs that you come back to when you get sick of listening to new music. You come back and those songs at 16, they're your formative years as a young adult almost. So, Guns N' Roses and Bon Jovi and that sort of stuff is kind of where it's at for me, Nirvana. So, I'm a total dag.
Look, you're exactly right. And whilst I do like sort of, people will call it doof, electronic, whatever you want to call it. I do love coming back to some old school rock. Foo Fighters, I don't mind. I do love a little bit of David Lee Roth and Van Halen.
Oh, me too. I'm a massive Van Halen fan. Mate, huge.
How good is it?
Yeah.
But my number one is Aerosmith.
Oh, yeah. Love that too. Yeah. Absolutely.
Aerosmith. So lucky enough to see both Aerosmith and Van Halen just a few years ago.
I was in Vegas recently and I missed out on the Aerosmith concert that they're doing one of those. What are they? When you're there all the time, what do they call that?
Yeah, the residency.
Residency. Yeah. I missed that. That would have been awesome.
Oh, that would have been awesome. Yeah. Steve Tyler still rocks out.
At the age of 100.
Like he did. I first saw them in, I'm going to say, not be around that, 1990, 91. I can't remember the exact year.
Right in the absolute peak.
Just amazing. Just after Pump. It was an amazing concert. And I saw them, as I said, a couple of years ago, not too different. And I don't know how old he is now. What'd he be, 60-something, late 60s?
Easy, I reckon. Amazing. Yeah, they were kicking in the early 70s, those guys.
Yep. So, 1973, their first album came out.
That's it. But
I might be a little bit fanatical, but yeah.
As I tend to do on these things, I do digress a little bit, but let's get back on. And I want to get back into line with something new for the Beer Hiller interviews. You know, obviously we finish off with the Fast Five, but I've got a new one, which I'm keen. Now that we've got past episode 50, this is episode 51. It's a new era for the Beer Hiller interviews. And I want to introduce the triple threat of your favorite beers. And it goes a bit like this. So what beers, and I want specific brews, not styles. So what beers do you like to start, session, and end your night with? Three beers.
That's a really good question. And not styles. So I've got to give you some specifics. Oh, really good question. If I was to be brutally honest, and I'm going to regret this. I'm really going to regret this.
Two's new.
But after it, yeah. I go back to my old days in music and I go back to my old days in beer as well. Not quite, unfortunately. But I do like a good cider.
What?
We don't make cider. It's really not in my wheelhouse, but I do like a good cider and I do love a Willie Smith traditional cider coming straight out of the brewery on a hot day.
Tassie represent.
There we go. I didn't say that just for you either. I honestly do.
So is that your start or your session?
I reckon that's kind of a pre. Like if we could have like just before I get into the beers, I just need that just a refresh, just to get ready. If that's all right, do you mind if I do that?
That's
your first
fine.
One,
you're
and
the first
I'm already.
One to do this
I'm already
you think you're making new rules?
Yeah, you'll find I might do that. So start off with a bit of a. Then what would I go for? Definitely then I'd head towards, I do love a well-made lager.
Underrated beer store.
Oh, absolutely. There's not enough good lager around. I was recently up in, lucky enough to be up in Noosa, to the heads of Noosa, who are pretty much a lager-only brewery, and just pumping out some really good, clean, simple lagers.
Nice.
I really do. I think for the first, I definitely say a good lager. I don't mind a hoppy lager. We do a hoppy lager here, which is popular. But a good, well made lager doesn't have to be hoppy, but as long as it's good, clean, proper lager, love it.
So did you get a session on that or start? What about ending your night?
I'd start on that lager. My mid would be a good IPA.
Yep.
I'm going to use. If I could have anything, it'd be Pliny, right? Pliny. I'd sit on Pliny. When I'm in the States, I'll sit on Pliny for a few skinners in the middle there every time, no matter where I am, because Pliny's everywhere, right? It's all the places that I'd go anyway.
And then, what do you go dark or strong to finish the night, or maybe a palate cleanser?
Depends on my mood, but typically speaking, I'd head towards an Imperial Stout.
Beautiful.
I was actually the last time I was in the States. I was doing a bit of a San Francisco. We'd already been to Russian River. I'd just been to Fieldwork, amazing brewery in San Fran. There's a few of them there, doing great IPAs. Again, really focused on the sort of stuff that we would be doing.
Okay.
We then made our way to it was called the Sierra Nevada Torpedo Room.
Oh, cool.
And I thought I wasn't actually very excited about it.
What?
And I love Sierra Nevada. It was great, but it was just a torpedo room. I'm thinking, we're going to have a few. You know, Sierra Nevada is one of my first gateway beers into craft.
Yeah, me too.
We'll head on down there. And I looked up at the board and I thought, oh shit! Like it was all of the barley wines, imperial stouts.
Oh.
Some of them on fruit, some of them on barrels. It was just amazing. And so if you want, I'd say Sierra Nevada. Yeah, one of their imperial stouts or their barley wines on wood. We're just amazing.
Beautiful. Well, now we've got the important stuff out of the way, we can get back into the rest of the interview. Now, you speak to the guys that have done what you've done and put it all on the line to follow their dreams, and many of them say it really has pushed them to breaking point, you know, financially, emotionally, mentally. Where do you sit with all that right now?
Oh, look, it's something I think it's so many different aspects to it, and I think what it comes down to is, I thank my lucky stars regularly that I've been given the opportunity to do what I do, and was given the opportunity. You know, we're talking about back in the late 2000s of me discovering this thing called beer. Right? I mean, if I didn't do that, well, fuck knows what I'd be doing. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. You'd have a normal job like me.
Yeah. I don't know. I could be. I'm still in IT. I'd have a hell of a lot more fucking money. I'll tell you that much. But I often think, you know, how lucky I was to discover something that I was, you know, I was pretty good at, but probably more importantly that I truly did love doing. And so I think through all the hard times, and there's a lot of hard times, I think, in anything we do these days, but beer is hard, really hard. You're everything. You're a small business person. You're a plumber, electrician, accountant, all these different things. And you're kind of good at some of them and not so good at others. and it's really hard, and you're working long hours and whatever else. But at the end of the day, you wouldn't have it any other way. And the only reason that is because of that passion, right? So really got to love this thing called brewing beer. You've got to love it.
You have
There's
to.
No other way you can do it. I mean, you know, there's no other way. And have a really, really, really understanding wife.
Yeah, I was going to say you need to tip the cap to the wife, don't you? Yeah.
So, absolutely.
So, if you were to give homebrewer Dave some advice, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, whatever it is, before you jumped into this with both feet, what would it be?
I wouldn't have done it a lot differently. You know, how many? I mean, made plenty of mistakes. We'll continue to make them.
That's okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of life, and you know, and a lot of the mentors that I've worked with over the years have always said to me, if you don't make mistakes, you're not learning, you're not going to improve. So
absolutely,
it's really important to make those mistakes. It feels shit at the time, but afterwards you'll thank your lucky stars. And I think, what would I tell myself? I would tell myself to be better funded at every stage of the process.
Yeah, that's probably a good thing, isn't it? Yeah, you need the cash flow, don't you? Yeah.
A big part of the stress of what we do is making it all work on the spreadsheet, keeping our accountant happy, that sort of stuff. So I'd probably, yeah, it's the age-old story, you know, come up with a budget and double it, right? It's true.
Yep.
It really is true. And it's not about that you need double the money to buy assets. You need double the money for cash flow and all those things that the business needs to just to make it a bit more comfortable. And
to pay the fucking taxes. Jesus.
Oh, don't talk about that. Not talking about
I'm sorry. Tonight, I wasn't going to mention the T word. It's been 4 years since you began the brewery or thereabouts, which isn't a long period of time, but in terms of how rapidly the Aussie craft beer market is changing, it's like a friggin' lifetime. What do you think surprised you the most from day one to now with the way the market's sort of grown and changed?
Yeah, look, if I take it back towards, you know, I started professional brewing about 8 years ago. And back then, you know, we had a little brewery out at Parramatta and there wasn't much around. There was like 5 or 6 breweries in Sydney. You know, same in other, probably more in Melbourne. Melbourne obviously taken off a bit earlier than us here in Sydney. But just the pure size of the market just continues to astound me and that it keeps on growing. And I think, we're kind of keeping up with it too. As a beer drinking market, we're keeping up just with all these new breweries coming on board. We're all doing okay. We don't see too many go under.
Yeah. I feel like I keep waiting for that correction to come. You know, like in America, it's happened.
Yeah. A little bit. I think that we're okay as long as we don't have too many. I think what's happening now is a lot of the new breweries coming on are a lot smaller, a lot more brew pub focused. So a lot more sustainable than, you know, we can't handle too many more sort of nationally distributed brands.
I think that whole American trend of being hyper-local is definitely sort of starting to translate over here as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's anybody, you know, I get asked the question, you know, 1,000 times is, oh, I want to start a brewery. What do I do? It's, well, you know, let's just take it easy. Make sure, again, gets back to what I was saying before, make sure this is what you truly love to do and then have a real good think about what model you're going to go with. We're, as a brewery now, we're growing significantly still, which is great, but you've got to have a fair amount of volume to support a distribution or a wholesale model. So,
yes, yep.
You know, I think it's a little bit safer maybe to hit that brew pub model for new guys.
Yeah, I think so. For you guys, are you cold chain logistics? Does that add extra complexity for you?
Yeah, we are. We try and as much as we can. We can't, you know, it's the age old story. We can't control what happens after we give people our beer, but we try and, you know, there's a strong education component of still the today of what we do, particularly with some of the independent stores as to why they should be putting us in the fridge and, you know, all that kind of stuff. We store out, we package cold, it stays cold, and then we get it to the customer as cold as we can as well. But, you know, what happens after that? I'd like to say we don't just hope for the best. As I said, we try and make sure that our customers understand that it needs to be cold, but we do our best. But I think there's an element also of that we need to, and this comes back down to our quality and our lab as well, is that maybe it's something that we need to make sure, we need to almost assume that a can of our beer is going to sit on a warm shelf for 6 months and do our best to ensure that it's still a quality beer. Won't be as good as something that was in the fridge for 6 months, but let's just try and make sure that it's still good.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, just this last weekend, you launched a couple of beers that you made in collaboration with Hop Nation. How did that come about?
Look, we've known these guys for a while. They're and I guess it's a good example of two breweries that are really focusing on what they, you know, again, getting back to our brand and really focusing on what our brand means. We both brew I mean, Hop Nation do some other stuff, particularly on the in the wine world, and obviously on the sour front as well. But they really have focused on hop forward beers and IPAs, like we have. But I guess there's a bit of a little bit of a difference in that we've always focused on West Coast, and the Hop Nation guys have focused on those East Coast or hazy IPAs.
Hazy, yeah. Yep.
Yep. And so we really just came. We've had a few, you know, sort of bumped into each other a few times over the last year, and thought how cool it would be to do a collaboration and really celebrate the fact that you know, that's the way it is. We're both hop forward breweries, but that doesn't mean we both do the same thing. We actually do quite different things. And we had them up here to show us how to brew a hazy, and we went down and showed them how to brew a West Coast. Oh, it was nice. Kind of cool.
And
it,
everybody was in love. Now, if only the East Coast and West Coast rap battles back in the day could have done the same thing, we wouldn't have had all those deaths.
Yeah. I never thought of that. But exactly.
My mind goes to strange places sometimes. I'm sorry.
No, do not apologize.
Now, look, when I was reading about those this week, I was trying to think back about other collaborations you've done. Now, obviously, being down here in Tassie, I don't see everything that you do, but I was struggling to come up with too many. I know you did one with Endeavour Brewing, and you did the one with the band Boy and Bear. Have I missed a few, or have you sort of just not really done that many in the past?
Look, we've been a big believer in not doing too many. What we do is we do partner with a lot of our customers. So we do invite our we've got a as well as our production brewery, we've got a pilot brewery here as well that we do a lot of our cool stuff on. And just a little 300-litre brewery, pumps out about 3 or 4 kegs, depending on what style of beer we're brewing. And we get our customers down, you know, come up with a beer together and brew something. Now, that's something we do somewhat regularly, and you wouldn't see that. That's really just a couple of kegs on at their place, and we'll keg on at ours, and really helps us, you know, cement those relationships.
I think it's a brilliant idea. I love it.
Yeah, it's a real lot of fun, and sometimes we forget how cool we take for granted what we do every day, right? Yeah. And these guys come in, oh shit, what are we gonna, you know, these guys are gonna be here for 7 or 8 hours. They're gonna be bored shitless, but they're there for 8 hours going, how fucking good is this?
I eat it
like
up.
We're brewing beer.
Yeah.
And it really makes you think. It really makes you think back to, you know, we are brewing beer. How good is this?
Yeah, beautiful.
And so it's a really, really nice way of doing things. So proper true collaborations with other breweries, we don't want to do too many of them. And when we do them, we want to do them properly and make them special. So, no, we haven't done many. We did one a couple of years ago with Eel River Brewery out of California, which was awesome. Lucky enough to go, I coincided with a trip to the States where we went and launched the beer in California, which was awesome.
Happy days.
So that was cool. They were down here for the brew. And even in that, I remember it was a year before that. So it must have been about 2 years ago. I think 3 years ago they approached us and said, oh, let's do a collaboration and we'll jump on email and we'll figure out a recipe you can brew. I said, no, I don't want to do that. I'll do it if you guys can come down here, we can go up there. So
that's awesome.
I know it's a big ask, but I'm not going to do it. You know,
face-to-face is the best.
I'm not a big believer in collaborations over email. It's really got to be a proper collab.
Yeah, cool.
And Boy and Bear was a good one as well. Those guys are such a beautiful bunch of people, and they were locals to Five Dogs, so they came down the brewery a fair bit, got to know them really well, and collaborated on brewing a beer together. They do an Australian tour once a year in regional centres to show, you know, to go and see their true fans, and so we put the beer on, and it was a logistical fucking nightmare, but we put the beer on in around 20 or 30 regional centres around Australia. It was a lot of fun.
Nice. So if you could wave your magic wand and collaborate with one brewery around the world, who would it be?
Pretty obvious, I reckon.
Russian River. Fair enough.
I haven't had the guts to ask, but you know, you never know, do you?
I feel like Russian River could be the answer to just about every fucking question tonight. So,
oh yeah,
that's okay. No, that's okay.
Unashamedly, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Now we're sort of coming to the end of this chat. We could sit here for ages, I think. So, I feel like you're a bit of a brother from another mother tonight. So, being that we're similar ages, and we
absolutely
love Van Halen and Aerosmith, but all good things must come to an end. And I thought I'd sort of bring it full circle. I mean, obviously you started as a home brewer and you've paid it forward by helping another home brewer to get their start in Ben Miller. So what about other home brewers out there looking to follow in your footsteps? what would be the one piece of advice you'd like to give them?
Advice is those considering going pro?
Yeah, they're thinking about it.
Yeah. Look, it's. I think I've already mentioned it. It's really, really important that this is what you truly love to do. And brewing's one of those things. There's quite a lot. The bug hits quite a lot of people, right? It's not just a bunch of people that love it. There's a whole lot of people that love it. How many breweries in the States? How many breweries have we got here now in Australia? I think it's a common bug, but it's important that you get through that honeymoon period of loving the brew and that you do truly love what you do because it's going to be a lot of hard work. So that's probably the main thing. I think there's a whole lot of technical things. I mean, I think anyone can learn the basics of brewing, but it's really the passion that comes out in the beer at the end of the day. If you're not passionate about what you do, whether it's brewing or whatever, everything you do, it'll be pretty clear in the beer at the end of the day. So that's probably the most important thing. And then surround yourself in people that know who have been doing this before. We're all pretty nice blokes most of the time.
Yep.
As long as it's not after a 14-hour day.
No.
but I think, you know, it's really important. This is, you know, I came from the IT and the finance industry and, it wasn't like this.
No,
we're all pretty open guys and, sometimes we might be a little bit busy, a little bit unavailable, but at the end of the day, we love to see other people succeed in this industry. So ask the questions.
Yep. Beautiful. Beautiful work. Now, how do you feel about answering the Fast Five? You think you got it in you tonight?
Always.
All right. Dave, your time starts now. Has beer ever led you astray and can you tell me about it?
I think I'd be a liar if I said that it hadn't. So it has.
Not listening to this, so it's okay.
Yeah, my wife is not listening to this. I think certainly my last trip to the States was around November 2016. I was lucky enough to I knew the guys from the Brewing Network pretty well and was invited over to be a guest on the Sunday session, which was pretty cool.
Nice.
And stopped over in Vegas on the way there for 5 days for a mate of mine's 40th, and then travelled around California for a couple of weeks. So many, many times I was led astray, and I cannot give you too many details.
You have got the best wife in the world.
Yes. Oh, I do, trust me.
Wow. Good work.
So, led me astray a lot of times.
Who's the most famous person you've ever shared a beer with?
In the brewing world, that trip that I went on, I was two of my heroes as a home brewer, like real sort of heroes as a home brewer and continuing the professional, was both Vinny and Jamil from Heretic. I don't know if you know Heretic at all. So Jamil was managed one of the most celebrated home brewers in the world and was a real big influence on me as a home brewer. And I got to sit with Jamil for about an hour and a half in his brewery when I went last time I was over there and the tours and all and just really sit down and talk deep about beer and it was pretty awesome.
Beautiful stuff. What has beer done for you that nothing else has in your life?
What has beer done for me? Whew, it's done many things for me, some good, some bad. I think it gets back to what I was saying before. It allowed me to find my passion. I've never, family aside and all that kind of stuff, but from a career perspective, I said it before, I'm not sure what I'd be doing if I didn't find beer, and it really gave me something that I could get out of bed early for every single day.
That is awesome, mate. Very happy for you. What is the best beer experience you've ever enjoyed?
Many of them. I've got a few beer moments, and I think – and you remember, it's funny, I've probably got about four or five beer moments and I remember them almost frame by frame, whether it's when I first had a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, but one of that really sticks in my mind was a trip I did through the States about 10 years ago. I went through a place called Kansas City, which is in the middle of bumfuck nowhere.
I know Kansas City, yep. Home of the Chiefs.
And two things happened that trip. One, I had some of the best barbecue I've ever had in my life, still to this day, at the back of a service station.
Naturally.
And the second was a night to a place called the Flying Saucer Beer Emporium, which had about 100 taps. And I remember at the end of the night sitting there with the bartender and saying, "All right, I've had a lot of beer. I'm really, really drunk. give me your favorite beer. And she went around the back, came out with this bottle, which is relatively well known now, but not so much back then, which was a New Belgium La Folie Sour Brown Ale.
Yep. Yep.
And this beer just blew my socks off. And I remember, as I was saying, I remember frame by frame just drinking this beer and thinking, holy shit, this is awesome. Like, this, you know, I've had Belgian beers, I've had whatever, but this thing is just a mix of American and Belgian of all sorts of different things. And yeah, I remember it very, very clearly.
Nice Love work. It. What's the most important thing you've learned in your craft beer journey?
Make sure you love it. Really, really love it. The other thing is, it's really, really easy to get caught up in it and work really hard every waking moment. And it's easy to do in something you love, but you've also got to stop and smell the roses every now and then. And that's hard sometimes.
Yeah, good advice. Good advice. And number six, do you know Chris Hemsworth? Can you help me get him on the podcast?
mate, if I knew Chris Hemsworth, I'd probably have answered that question a bit further up the chain.
True.
Good but one. No, I do not. But I have seen his house. I saw his. So last time I was in Byron Bay, just sort of traveling around with Brad Rogers, he did point out where his house was that they've been building.
That big mansion.
On one of the beaches that are down. Yeah. We're sitting up at the, showing it, we're up at the lighthouse and looking down, and he showed me where it was. So maybe Brad can help you. At least he knows where the house is.
I'm asking everybody. I've asked the Stone and Wood boys. it's not happening.
They're a good bet, seriously.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure they are too, but it doesn't seem to be working for me. So I'm thinking that maybe this will be the last time I ask question number six, and maybe I just need to move on. I think.
Don't give up on your dreams, please.
That sounds like an Aerosmith song.
Could be. I'm sure it is. Dream on.
Yeah, yeah, dream
one
on.
One of my favorites.
Dream on.
Should we finish with a duet?
Well, I'd play it as closing music if I could, but I reckon I'd be sued because it'd go through Spotify and it'd ping up and say, no, you can't do that, you healer.
All right, anyone listening, go and when you finish listening to this podcast, go and listen
great
to Dream
track,
On.
Great track. Mate, this has been great tonight. We've gone well over time, but I don't give a shit because I've loved it.
Thank you.
I said I could crack another beer and keep talking with you because, mate, you've got some great experiences, some great stories, and you produce some awesome beers. So
thank you. I appreciate
good
it.
Good luck to you in the future, mate. I'm really keen to see what comes out of Akasha, as you told me to call it earlier, not a Kasha, because I think there's some special stuff to come. So best of luck for the future, mate.
And thank you. I appreciate
cheers
it.
Great beers.
Legend. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for tuning in to another Beer Healer interview. I really hope you guys enjoyed the episode as much as I did. If you want to follow along with more Beer Healer content, you can check out my Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram pages. Just search Beer Healer, or you can visit beerhealer.com. If you like the podcast, can you please help me spread the word by subscribing and rating it and sharing it with your beer-loving friends?